Olé! Olé! It's showtime!
You are listening to The Mini Minxes, the UK's newest Disney podcast. It's a mischievous way to start your week. Disney Girl Power!
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 10 of The Mini Minxes. I'm Kimmy as always, and joining me once again is...
Michelle!
Welcome back, Michelle.
Thank you, Kimmy.
Getting a bit of a pro at this, aren't you?
Well, 3 weeks on the row.
I know, you're doing good, you're doing good. So, first of all, I just want to welcome everybody to the show and apologise for the hardship maybe you've had of actually trying to find us. Obviously, I've changed the Podbean feed and people aren't finding us and struggling to find us, but I apologise. Okay, so on this episode, listeners who have been listening from the beginning may recognise the voice of the person in our feature. We have Laura coming on, and she's asked to come on to talk about all about the Brave premiere she attended.
And what a premiere it sounded like. It was a special press junket, wasn't it, Kimmy, that she attended?
She did, and she's come on to share all the information and stories that she has from that weekend. So that should be interesting. And we then also interview the newest member of the Moms panel, Sue Farrell.
Yay!
And we learn all about the whys, the wheres, and the how-fors of joining the Moms panel.
Did you know that she's now the second active Disney Moms panellist Disney have, Kim?
I didn't know that, and I even know the first one is Emma.
The lovely Emma.
Lovely Emma. We like Emma.
We love her videos. Can't wait to see the new one. She's just come back today, I believe, as we're recording, from a week at the Wilderness Lodge.
I know, I've seen. I can't wait to see them. So, everybody, sit back, relax, and enjoy the episode.
Well, everyone, we are proud to continue our regularly scheduled show.
Okay, so joining us today, we have the lovely Sue Farrell, who is the newest UK member of the Disney Moms panel. Hi, Sue.
Hi.
And we would like to ask you a few questions, if that's obviously all right with yourself.
Yeah, an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, so what attracted you to Disney, first of all?
Well, I actually went there 32 years ago. I just went as a teenager with my best friend at the time, and we went over to Canada and then down to Florida. And to be honest, I didn't even want to go to Disney World. I know, there's the irony. All that was there at the time was the Magic Kingdom and the River Country Water Park. And I just didn't get it. But as soon as I saw that castle, I fell in love with the place. And obviously, I've been hooked ever since. So that was my first trip. And, you know, we've been several times since.
So you saw the castle and you fell in love. I think that happens to most of us, doesn't it? You see the castle and it's just like completely breathtaking, and it just sort of takes you back to your childhood, I think. But
it definitely does. When we go across on that ferry boat, when you see it, you can see it so far away. It's so magical. And I think if anyone hasn't seen it, it's difficult to explain it, but I think I don't know anyone that's seen that castle and doesn't feel the same way.
Can I take you to what would you say is your best experience that you have in any of the Disney parks? What's the one thing that you look forward to the most?
Well, the best thing, the experience I've had that's really stuck in my mind, when my son, who was 9 or 10, persuaded me to go on the Tower of Terror, because I just wouldn't go on it. I wasn't absolutely never going to go on that thing. And he took me on it, and I love it now. And that's, you know, through a child's eyes, because he's much younger than me than when I went for the first time. And you know, I thought, if he's brave enough to do it, I need to go as well. And it's fantastic. But every time I go in any theme park, there's so many things. I wrote a list of my favourite attractions this afternoon, and it just went on and on and on. It's ridiculous. I mean, everything, every park I walk into is my favourite for that moment. You just get a special feeling, don't you, when you walk through those gates, whichever park it is. Our first favourite attraction at every visit is Splash Mountain. We really love that. We usually stay at Wilderness Lodge, so we go get the boat across to the Magic Kingdom and just go straight to Splash Mountain. And if there's no queue, we'll go on it again and again and again. And hopefully we don't get soaked. because last time we went, they seem to have changed it where you got drenched every single time you went on it, but other times it's not so bad. So it's just lucky, isn't it, whether you're going to get wet or not. I mean, that's our favourite. I can list a load of others, but that's the one for me, Splash Mountain.
Oh, and do you go hardcore on Splash Mountain? Are you poncho or no poncho?
Oh, no poncho.
Oh, I like that. That's a good answer. I think it's the animatronics in that as well that make that so special. It's the sort of like, not only is it sort of like a bit of a thrill ride with your log float, but it's all the, you know, the story behind it the dark scenes and everything in it.
Yeah, it's the whole thing, isn't it? It's fun, it's lovely music. Then you go out a bit at the top, you go outside again and you can see everyone waving at you, and then you go back in and you think, oh, here it comes. And then it's never as bad. I mean, the first time I went on it, I was shaking like a leaf, but you know, you get used to it, don't you?
So have you got, other than Splash Mountain then, is there any other sort of favourite thing that you and your family like to do in the parks?
Well, in the parks, I mean, the other rides we love. Disney Hollywood Studios is my favourite park. We love the Backlot Tour and the Great Movie Ride and Lights, Motors, Action. I mean, as I said, I could tell you lists upon lists of things I love doing. Expedition Everest is another one that I really had to brave. It's all the mountains, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I went on Space Mountain when I was 19. I won't go on it now, though. Space Mountain frightens me more than anything. I don't know why. But when you see the track, if you ever go through it, when the lights are on and it's not working, if you're on the Tomorrowland Transit Authority, you go through it. And if you see that track, oh my, it looks awful in the light. When it's dark, you can't see it. It's not so bad. But... And we love Epcot. We love Spaceship Earth and Soarin' as well. They're amazing.
So basically everything in the parks is a family tradition for you.
Yeah, it is. We like the best. I mean, I've never been on the Mission Space. I don't think anybody would ever get me on that, even on the orange side. I'm too frightened of that. But yes, generally, we have our routine where we go on all our rides and get our fast passes so we know that we can do them again and all that.
So moving on to now that about the Mums panel.
Yeah.
How and why did you decide to apply?
I've been applying for this since it started, so this is the fifth year.
All right.
I thought, for me, it sounded like the perfect job because you're working from home, working with Walt Disney World, talking about Walt Disney World and helping people plan their holidays, which is what I did anyway, for the last bit. So I thought, well, that sounds perfect. And I have reached the final twice before. And I just, this year I thought, I'll do it one more time because I just can't see me ever getting there. I got so close.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it was a no. So that's why I applied, because I just thought it was perfect for me.
Talking about that, you've applied five times. What is the initial application process? Because you'll be a bit of an expert on that, won't you?
It does change every year, though.
Really? Oh.
Slightly, just to keep us on our toes. There's three rounds. So the first round, I mean, they say that 20,000 people can apply each year. Mm-hmm. And they close it when they reach that. I never know if they get that many or not, but I know it's several thousand. And the first round is just a series of questions like drop-down menu, yes or no, or they'll ask a question and you have to say if it's true or false. And I think it's just to gain, make sure whoever's applying does have a very basic knowledge of Walt Disney World. They're quite easy questions, to be honest. And then you have to write a few 100-word essays as well, just your opinion on your favourite resort or how would you help someone that was going for the first time. And from that round, they then cut loads of people out and then send you another round, which is more essays. I think the second round this year was 300 or 400 word essays, which that's the difficult bit, whittling it down to only 100 words, but getting your point across. Mm-hmm. And we had to do a 60-second video of ourselves talking about our favourite memory of Walt Disney World, which... To be honest, again, that was very, very difficult, A, to find a memory out of all those years of going, and then to talk about it in less than 60 seconds. So that's a challenge, let me just say. When we were filming that, my husband filmed me. I had my script stuck on his face so that I didn't look like I was... So I didn't look like I was looking down at the script. It was just bullet points, just so I remember to get everything in. I had a clock sort of to the right that I kept my eye on without being obvious. And it was hysterical. And I said, you know, let's just laugh, get this out of the way, and then do it properly. And obviously the final cut worked. And then the next round was the telephone interview. For the lucky few, not many get through to the last round. It's maybe, I think it used to be double the amount of people that they required. So for our year last year, it would have been about 30 people because they chose 15 in the end. That's just a telephone interview. And I was speaking to Disney executives from the USA and the UK about mostly UK-based things like, you know, how would you do long-haul flights with young children and how do you recommend people get over the jet lag and things. But to be honest, I can't remember anything else. I was so nervous. I talked, and I can't even remember what I was saying. And I was really sure that I'd messed it up.
But you didn't.
I didn't. But at the time, I just thought I talked too much about... I talked for about 5 minutes, and then I said to her, "You didn't even ask me that, did you?" And I can't even tell you what it was because I can't remember myself, but she said, "That's fine." And I thought, oh no, I've just wasted all this time talking about something completely different. But obviously whatever it was I was talking about, she liked. So it's so nerve-wracking, I can't tell you. Oh dear.
So what was the time span from the initial contact that you sent off to Disney to this point of having this conversation with the executives from the UK and the US, then what sort of period of time passed?
They usually start it about the second or third week of September, and this was the middle of November it finished, so it's quite a long time. They made us wait a lot longer than the other years, and that's the worst bit, because you look at all the forums online and see if anyone else has heard, because you know there's so much excitement around the application process, and as soon as somebody's heard, then everybody's looking at their emails and, you know, oh, it's so stressful. Everyone that goes through it just says, oh, not never doing that again and all that. But everybody does it every year, really. Everybody wants to be on it again. I mean, it's so worth it, but it is a really stressful process because everybody really wants it. I think if anybody loves Walt Disney World and they really love the idea of being on the Mums panel, you know, it's in your heart, so it hurts even more when you don't make any progress in the application.
I can imagine that could probably put some people off from applying the year after as well, so I suppose you have to sort of pick yourself up, dust yourself off again.
You do. I've heard of people that have done it once and will never do it again. But I think that's a shame, because I think a lot of people have got so much different aspects to bring to the panel. Mm-hmm. I think that's what they're looking for, different people all the time. Not just the stereotypical person that's been so many times and likes doing this, and this. They want something a bit different. So I would always urge anyone to apply again if they like the idea. It's wonderful.
Going back to your video then, can you remember what the memory was that you chose?
The memory I chose, well, it was difficult because I didn't want to say the same thing as everybody else. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to use something that truly was a good memory. And I thought, well, we like to stay at Wilderness Lodge and they offer something called a flag family. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard of it, where once a day, every day, they pick a different family. You have to apply to do it. They take you up on the roof to raise the 5 flags for the day. And it's such an amazing experience. They give you a little ceremony and you all raise the flags. And when we took Sam up there, he was only little. He really loved it. You know, the American flag went up and the Wilderness Lodge flag and the Disney flag, and the view from the top of Wilderness Lodge is out of this world. So you get loads of pictures and it's fantastic. It's a really good experience. And I thought, well, it's a bit different because unless you stayed there, you probably wouldn't even know about it. So I thought it'd be a bit unique.
I was going to say, I've never heard of that before. It sounds like a really amazing experience.
Fantastic. Yeah, really lovely.
Bear that in mind if I stay at the Wilderness Lodge.
Have you stayed at any other resorts then, or is it just Wilderness Lodge that you always stay at?
We love to stay at Wilderness Lodge, but we do go to the other ones to have dinner or just to look around. because it's nice to see them all, but we just love that resort so much that we don't want to stay anywhere else. But as I say, that, you know, every resort has got something different, and we love to take dinner or just to go and have a drink there, or, you know, to have a nose around all the other ones, because they're all wonderful.
Ah, Michelle's a bit of a Grand Floridian junkie, aren't you? You've not stopped there, but you do try and eat there as many times as you can in one holiday, don't you, Michelle?
We're trying for our next one. I think we're down to eat there about 4 or 5 different times.
It's definitely worth going there as well. I love that resort.
We sort of went and visited last time we were over, and it was like, my husband says, oh, we've got to stay here, we've got to stay here next time. Unfortunately, hasn't worked out. We're over at Port Orleans, but one day we'll get there.
But Port Orleans is lovely too, isn't it?
I hope so. It looks beautiful from the pictures I've seen, and I've not heard many bad reports about it, so that should be pretty amazing.
Oh, it'd be lovely. We went and had a look at the new Princess Royal rooms when we were on the training. And the resort, I was really impressed with it. It's lovely, really beautiful.
So on to the training.
It was a 4-day training experience, but I went out the day before just to, they said I could do that just to get over the jet lag a little bit and get there on time. So we stayed at Disney's Boardwalk, which was gorgeous. And of course, all the Christmas decorations were up because it was December, so it was so pretty. So on the Friday morning, which was the day everyone was due to arrive, I went down onto the boardwalk, I took my breakfast and just sat in the sunshine. I mean, it was December and it was so warm, and it was so exciting. I couldn't wait to meet everybody and find out what we were going to do, because they hadn't given me our itinerary yet. I had to wait for everybody else. And some of the other panellists that have been on the panel several years came down as well and gave us a big informal lunch on that Friday, just so, you know, we could all meet each other before the official thing started. So that was really nice, over at the Yacht Club. Really lovely of them to do that. And our first was that we met Meg Crofton, who's the president of Walt Disney Parks and Resorts in the US and France. And it was like a big reception to meet her. And it was fantastic. And she gave us some of her time. She's obviously a very busy lady and amazing. I'll just run through a few of the bits and pieces we did. The first night we went to Mickey's Very Merry Christmas Party at the Magic Kingdom, which I've never been to because we don't normally go in December. So that was really good. There was snowfall on Main Street and lots of gorgeous things. But I was jet lagged a little bit that first night still, but it was wonderful. When we had to record our personal videos for the Mums Panel website, I really enjoyed that. It was very nerve-wracking because we had to all learn what we were going to say. We couldn't read it. And they asked us loads of questions. We had a camera crew with us, makeup artist, all that kind of thing. It was so exciting. We had a special photo shoot with Mickey in the Magic Kingdom before the park opened, right in front of the castle. And I loved that. That was my favourite bit of all. If you look on the Mums Panel website, all the photos are on there. We rode Big Thunder Mountain, and the Jungle Cruise actually with a camera crew.
All right.
It was so fun. I mean, they followed us around the whole time. Every time we walked into a room, there they were. Yeah, you kind of got used to it in the end. I mean, I think when I go back there on holiday in July, I'm going to think, where are they? A bit unloved. And then we had a private dinner at the Contemporary Resort and watched Wishes fireworks from the restaurant, which was lovely. We went to the Candlelight Processional at Epcot and had dinner at the American Adventure. Oh, just so much. Every day was filled with exciting new things, and the new panellists were lovely. We all got on so well, just because we've all got that big common interest. Yeah. But our little bus took us around, and we had a 4-hour tour of downtown Disney and went in so many restaurants, and they didn't tell us we were going to be eating. So we had lunch in the Wave at the Contemporary Resort. We got on our bus, and I think we visited about 5 or 6 restaurants where they all wanted us to sample their best dishes. But by about restaurant number 4, we didn't really want any more food. But it was fun, you know. It was really good. I mean, it was the most amazing experience, a real whirlwind. I was exhausted, but I know I've definitely made some lifelong friends. It's such fun to be on the panel.
That's a lovely thing to sort of hear, isn't it, Michelle? Making lifelong friends.
I definitely have. Yeah.
So going back to the phone call that you got then, the day that you got the phone call, where were you? Were you did you were expecting the phone call? Was it a surprise? Were you told to sit and wait by the phone at a certain time?
No, I wasn't. I was expecting it because all the US panelists heard the night before. Mm-hmm. Some of them posted on Facebook that they were on the panel. So I thought, oh, am I going to get a call saying no? Because normally they tell everyone to keep quiet until they've told everyone that's, mm-hmm. you know, been interviewed. So that they heard on the Wednesday night. Thursday morning I went out. I came back. I was just getting my lunch and the phone went. And she told me I've made the panel. I couldn't believe it. I mean, after so many years of trying to get on this thing, I just couldn't believe it. So she said to me, don't say anything to anybody because we've got to ring everyone else and tell them they're not on the panel. Oh. These were only the UK people left, mm-hmm. though. There wasn't many, but she didn't want me to put it on Facebook or anything until she told everybody. Mm-hmm. So I was alone at home. I was shaking like a leaf. A few tears were cried, but happy tears. And then she rang me back and said, you can tell everybody. So as soon as I knew, then, you know, the whole world went mad, really. The mum's panel world, I mean. But it took a long time for me to kind of grasp that I got on the panel because I'd just been trying for so long and just expected her to say, sorry, not this time, but, you know, did really well, try again, blah, blah. Fantastic, amazing experience, a real whirlwind then, getting everything ready for leaving my family for nearly a week and getting Christmas organised before I went because I knew I wouldn't have much time because the training started around, I went on the 8th of December and I got home on the 14th. So I lost a week, which is quite a lot, isn't it, when you're organising Christmas yeah. and stuff. So, I think when I sat on that plane, I just relaxed then because I knew I was going, everything was done and I could just look forward to it. And I could sit there and practice my video speech that I had to learn by heart on the plane. I think everyone thought it was a bit nutty.
So how long do you stay on the panel for?
When you apply, last year it said you have to be prepared to do it for 24 months, but my contract is for a year, and then I believe they invite people back to do it who they choose to do it for a second year or not. So at the moment, my contract will end at the end of December.
Keep our crossed for you. Would you want to continue it for another year?
I'd love to. I'd really love to, yeah. I'm really enjoying it.
Silly question, really, isn't it?
It's very time consuming, but it's good. It's so good, you know, such fun. And as I say, I've made so many friends now that, you know, that's all a big part of it too, the sort of social interaction. So it's really, really like it.
So how long would you say you do work on it then? You say it takes a lot of time. If somebody was looking into this, how long are they, you know, are you expected to actually put into this?
I'm contracted to answer 25 questions a week. Mm-hmm. But they're not just yes or no answers. You have to give, you know, quite a detailed response. Mm-hmm. And some of that needs a lot of research. So I don't know how many hours a week I work, but it's more than I thought it would be, and I've had to shuffle my day around a little bit to do it, but still enjoying it. But yeah. I would be prepared that it does take a lot of time.
And of course, if people have got jobs or they've got other commitments,
exactly,
this is all on top of your other commitments.
Yeah, and there's no, you know, we all sign the same contract to do the same amount of questions, so you know, you can't say, well, I work, so I'll only do half of that. Mm-hmm. You know, that doesn't, you know, if you sign it, you sign it and you're expected to do it.
No phoning in sick.
No. Don't get any holidays or anything like that.
I'm just imagining people phoning up Mickey Mouse and phoning in sick.
Yeah, won't be doing any questions today. Yeah.
So who was the first person that you told them when you found out?
Well, my husband was working away. He was down in London. I tried to ring him, but he texted me back saying I'm on a conference call myself. So he couldn't. I wanted to tell him first. And yeah. I just wanted to tell everybody because I knew he wouldn't go on Facebook. And I needed to tell somebody because I thought I was going to burst.
I bet you did, yeah.
Oh, gosh. It's making me shake just thinking about it. And then I'd seen my girlfriends that morning just for coffee. And, you know, they knew I was waiting to hear. And they all thought, as I did, that I was going to get a no because I hadn't heard yet. So I texted them and I said, don't put anything on Facebook, but I'm on. So they were all excited. Oh, so that's quite nice. Someone was enjoying my news.
God, I bet you were so frustrated, your husband. I know I would be if my husband wouldn't pick your phone up.
No, no, it's difficult, isn't it? I mean, everybody else is getting on with their day, and there's me wanting to shout from the trees, and there's nobody to listen.
So who assigns you the questions you have to answer? Are they just sort of sent out to you by a coordinator, or are you a sort of like specialist in a particular field? Obviously, there's the UK angle, but is there another angle that you sort of cover?
Yeah, I mean, there are specialists on the panel. The UK is not actually classed as a specialist subject, so that means anybody can answer questions about the UK. Emma and myself try and do them if we can get them. Mm-hmm. What happens, they just appear on a page on a website, and you choose the ones that are best suited to you, really. So the ones that you've got personal knowledge of, or, you know, you can find the answer easily. As I say, if there's any UK questions, we try and grab them as well, especially about tickets or things that are special to the UK that wouldn't necessarily be known in America. They have different ways of booking and all that kind of thing. So, and the Disney dining plan is slightly different for the UK market as it is to the USA. So we try to do that. I mean, there are specialists, like there's Disneyland California specialist, the Cruise Line, Run Disney, the Vacation Club, Disney World, we all do that. And Adventures by Disney, they're specialists, and they will get their questions directed straight to them if they're about their specialist subjects, so no one else can answer them. But the rest of it is just kind of a free for all. You just choose which ones you want to.
You're not scrapping over questions, are you, Susan?
No. No. No, but sometimes you think, oh, I would have liked that one because I know that. But the other person knows it as well. You know, everyone knows a lot. So, you know, it's just lucky if you're there at the time when the question comes up that you really would like. But, you know, I never touch a question if I don't know anything about it, because I always know there's someone that's done that. Someone else would be able to answer it better. It's all about the guest and giving them the best answer that we can.
we were having a little bit of a joke, weren't we, the other week? We went to Mouse Meets, myself, the other week in Birmingham, which is a bit of a fan event.
Yes.
And you'll probably know the story better than I do, Kim, from last year's Mouse Meet about the rice cooker.
I knew you were going to bring the rice cooker up. Can we not forget about the rice cooker?
No! Because, you know, seemingly someone must have contacted a Disney Mums panellist and asked, can you take a rice cooker with you?
Okay.
And it sort of leads me into, do you tend to get some very strange questions?
Well, I haven't personally had any strange questions, and all I would say is that whatever your question, there's always someone that will be able to help you, because while it might feel strange to me or to somebody else, to another person it isn't strange. And we have to think that the poor guest wants a genuine answer. So I mean, there was a lady the other day that was worried her false teeth might fall out on one of the rides.
Aww.
But, you know, I mean, I didn't answer that, but someone else took it and gave a very, very good answer. You know, I can't even remember now. If you search, you'll find it. But I mean, I would like, you know, just like to say, we don't, although it might, as I said, it might sound funny to me, some of the questions, or funny to someone else, to the person that's asking the question, it's a genuine question, so we have to give it care and consideration.
There's no such thing as a silly question,
then. No, there's not. I've asked questions before. Before I was on the panel, I used to ask questions. So there's always someone. There's such a broad depth of knowledge between everybody. There's 42 panellists at the moment answering questions. So there's definitely someone that will be able to help you if you had a funny question. If you thought this is too silly, don't ever think that.
Apart from asking me questions on the show, Kim, get in touch with the Mums panel with the real tricky ones and just ask me the easy ones.
Well, you could do. They'd probably get more joy out of asking them than asking us, because we don't tend to really help people. We just confuse people.
Like that, yeah.
So is it just you and Emma UK members, or is there more? Or
no, at the moment it's just me and Emma. There's another girl, Jo, who's first UK mum, but she's not active at the moment on the panel, but there's only ever been three of us.
Okay, well, that's quite a privilege to have then.
I know, that's exactly, yeah, it's amazing.
Do you think Disney would look at increasing the amount of UK members they have on the panel with the tourism sort of growing in that area, do you reckon, or...?
I have no idea, to be honest. I don't know whether they need more than two of us. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You'd think so, but I've no idea what they're looking for at any given time or even why they picked me. We never find out what we did that was different to everybody else that made them choose us, which is quite frustrating because I'd love to know what made them pick me after 5 years. What did I do differently this time than I did the other times? But no, it's all a mystery, I'm afraid.
That mouse, he likes keeping things hidden.
Exactly.
There's something that I've been sort of reading about that was sort of a few people who other podcasts I listen to and their presenters, mainly the US ones, have been invited to join this Disney Park Inside Ears.
Yeah.
How is that going to run by the side of the mum's panel? Do you know anything about that or are allowed to speak about that?
All I know is that they've told us it won't impact on the mum's panel at all. And I don't know if it's a replacement for the Mickey Mum's Club, or I know it's only by invitation only to start with. I haven't heard about it for ages, though. I didn't even know if it was still going on. I've heard that little about it.
Yeah, it was about February. It sort of broke over here, January, February. And
yeah,
it's such a shame to sort of, when you've got such a wealth of knowledge with the mum's panel, as you say, 42 different panelists, to change that to people who perhaps make their living out of Disney, if you like, by being through authors of books or podcasters, etc. I really sort of, you know, maybe conflict of interests may be appearing a little bit.
Yeah, as I say, I don't really know anything about it. I did at first think it would kind of challenge the amount of questions that people would send to us still, but it doesn't seem to have affected it, so I don't know what's going to happen with that.
Seems to have been very, very quiet over the last couple of months.
Exactly. So. Yeah, maybe it didn't work out, or I don't know.
Yeah, maybe they've changed their mind and decided if it's not broken, don't try and fix it.
Yeah, sure.
So what do you hope to do in the future then? Are you allowed to reapply if you do your 24 months, are you allowed to reapply afterwards? Or
I don't think I ever have to reapply again. It's just if I do 24 months, I have to have a year off.
All right.
Something to do with US law, employment laws or something. Mm-hmm. And it's up to them. They just invite people back. I think they ask who would like to be considered and then they invite those back that they wish to be on the panel again. So if it carries on like that, I could do 2 years if I'm lucky enough, have a year's break and do another 2 years. But who knows what the future will hold. I would love to be involved with it for as long as they need me or want me.
What about if they phoned you up tomorrow and said, right, we need you to move to Florida full time?
Yeah, I do. Not sure what my family would say. That would be fantastic.
I'm sure they'd be fine. They'd be like, oh, yeah, we'll come with you.
Yeah.
Just uproot us.
Yeah. Save on the airfare, wouldn't it?
Well, that's it, isn't it? And with flight prices the way they are at the moment.
It's
been a real pleasure finding out a bit more about the mum's panel.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, thank you. It's nice to talk about it. Are you going to be applying?
Personally, myself, I'm limited because of my time commitments, because of my job. So okay. I'm not able to, unfortunately. I'd chop a leg off to apply.
Yeah.
But alas, it's not feasible.
Oh.
I can't.
I'd love to, mate. I don't know. I'm a bit, what's the word? I don't have any confidence in myself. I don't think, you know, why would they want to hear from me?
Why wouldn't they want to hear from you?
Well, that's probably a good point there. I don't know.
Have faith and put your application in September. You never know what might happen.
Is that when it starts then, in September?
Yeah, beginning of September.
I might just have a go.
You never know, do you?
Well, no.
You've got to be in it to win it.
True, you've got to be in it to win it. I quite like that.
Yeah. So you'll never be a mum's panellist if you never apply.
Words of wisdom. Being on the mum's panel hasn't put me off going to Disney for holidays still, because I have people have said that to me, if you work with them, you won't want to go there on holiday anymore. But that's totally not true. So I shall carry on doing my lovely work on the panel and enjoying our holidays.
Oh, thank you very much for joining us. And again, thank you very much for telling us more about the mum's panel. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Oh, it's been a pleasure too. Thank you very much.
And I hope you enjoy the rest of your time as a Disney mum panelist, and enjoy the rest of your holidays at Disney, because I'm sure there'll be many to come.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Nice to have spoken to you, Sue.
And you.
Yes, Lisa?
Hey, listeners. Looking for something a little different in your Disney podcast?
Then you shake Pal Mickey and you squeeze him.
A little old school.
It's time for a film strip. Yay!
Perhaps a little off the beaten path.
She just took the theme.
Confused? Intrigued? Puzzled? Come find us on iTunes or at thosedarncats.net.
Every Wednesday, check out Those Darn Cats.
Here's some more fun, starring yours truly.
And in this episode's feature, we have an old voice joining the show. We have Laura, who's come to tell us all about the Press Junket. So, over to you, Laura.
Okay, so it was the Brave Global Press Junket last Friday, and I got to go, which was very lucky for me, and it was very fun. I got to go, it was the Global Press Junket, so it was all media and journalists that were there. There wasn't any podcasts and things like that, it was just sort of TV and print press journalists. Mm-hmm. So I got to go because I'm a journalist, a fashion, beauty and travel journalist, and I've got a magazine as well. So they invited me for that, because I'm going to do some kind of strange fashion-themed Brave features.
For your magazine?
Yeah, and some nice travel features as well on Edinburgh and Brave and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, so I got to go, and I thought whilst I was there, the mini Minxies, you guys, my old home, might like some lovely things to play.
Definitely.
So it was very, very exciting and very, very good. It was a long day though. I only went for one of the days. I could have gone for another. Well, two other days, but there wasn't much on the other days, and I had to work and stuff, so I went to the middle day.
So do you know what happened over the weekend though? Sort of through what was happening over?
Oh yeah, I can talk through the whole thing. So they flew over, I think about 50 American journalists. They had the ABC network was there and things like that. So they flew them over, and they flew over some journalists from Singapore and Spain, all sorts of places. So it was the whole world's press junket, so representatives from all the countries were all there. They put them up in like all the 2 5-star hotels in Edinburgh.
It's nice to see that they've started off promoting Brave with such a big sort of press launch when you compare to what they did with John Carter, which was a press dribble, and nobody actually knew what John Carter was. I'm still lost, and it's been out at the cinema, so obviously Disney are putting, maybe they've learnt a lesson through John Carter, I don't know, but they seem to be putting so much into this film.
Yeah, no, they are. I was sitting at dinner trying to work out roughly how much some of the different things they had on, and when you hear what they had on over the weekend, you'll be amazed at the amount of money I think that's gone into the launch of this. They're determined that it's going to be a big, big thing when it comes out. And they've done well. All the journalists left pretty happy, so.
That's always a good start.
Yeah. So, do you want me to tell you a bit about what happened over the days?
Yeah, go on, tell us what was organised over the weekend.
Yeah, so I think the only people really there on the sort of first day, which was the Thursday, the 31st, was the kind of the American press that had just kind of flown in. So they were just settling in and they had some screenings. They must have had about 10 preview screenings over the weekend. Mm-hmm. For different groups of journalists. They had one for New York journalists, one for LA journalists, one for UK journalists and stuff like that. So they had different screenings. So some of them were happening on Thursday night for people to see the film. I saw the film on Friday morning, first thing Friday morning. When you went in, they had about 8 security guards in the cinema and they took our phones off us and stuff like that and put them in little bags and gave us raffle tickets so that we knew what number was our phone. So they did that and then they were just watching us in the cinema to make sure there was no lights flashing or anything like that. People weren't recording things or taking pictures from other phones and stuff, but it was a really good film. The short at the start, the Pixar short that's at the start, I think is the best Pixar short that they've ever made.
Now, which one is it? Because the last sort of few Pixar films they've released, they've sort of had a Toy Story short.
They tend to be funny, weird little shorts, like about a lamb and things like that loses its coat and things like that. They tend to be about completely different things.
I thought Cars 2 had the Toy Story vacation short, but I might
be
wrong.
It might have done.
And then didn't another one have a Rapunzel shot, or am I making that up as well? No, that was Beauty and the Beast, wasn't it, 3D?
Oh, okay.
But yeah, what was this shot, sorry?
This was about a little boy whose job it is to climb up onto the moon and change it from a full moon to a half moon and things like that. Now, without giving too much away about how he does it, because it really is really beautiful, I don't want to give away how he does it, but basically his job is to... It's supposed to leave you to think that every time you see a half moon, you'll remember what this little boy's done to make it a half moon and things like that.
Oh.
So it's really, really sweet.
Is it La Luna it's called?
Yeah, is it out already? Rubbish,
no, it's not out already. I think it's won some awards already. That's the only reason I sort of know of it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's La Luna. Yeah, it's amazing. So that was really good. And the film itself was excellent.
So for people that haven't really heard of Brave before, can you give us sort of like a quick rundown of the plot without giving any spoilers away?
Yep, it's set in Scotland, like me.
Mm-hmm.
It's about Merida, who's a princess, but not a typical princess. So they said at the press conference they were very determined not to make her into a typical princess. So she's quite rebellious and tomboyish and stuff like that. She doesn't follow the lines of normal Disney princesses whatsoever. Her dad's the king and her mum's the queen, obviously, of Scotland.
That's King Fergus and Queen Eleanor, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So
with the pronunciation, because I know we've seen a lot of footage of the character popping up in Epcot and doing sort of like appearances around Walt Disney World. A lot of people are struggling, and as we have a Scottish speaker available to tell us how it's properly pronounced, would you say that again, how we should be pronouncing her name?
Yeah, well, I always called it Merida, but John Lasseter calls it Merida, so we'll go with the God's version. Merida, yep.
Merida. Yep. I'll get it through. Sorry, Laura, I just issue up. I've, you know, this big thing about this film and we can't say a name properly. It's
not a Scottish name that I've ever heard of. I don't know whether they've made it up, but it's quite nice. So.
Yeah, some of the other names seem sort of Scottish-ish. But...
Yeah, they are. That one, it's just a nice name. I think they've kind of made it up to sound a bit Scottish, but it's not really. So.
Princess Sibyl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, go on.
No, it's okay. So basically the king and queen think it's time for her to marry. She doesn't want to, so it's all about how she tries to avoid them matching her up with an arranged marriage with one of the sons of one of the clans.
Hot topic, seems that they're on about trying to outlaw that in the UK at the moment.
it's definitely a comedy film rather than a more serious one. It's very, very funny. It's mostly, I'd say it was 80% funny and 20%
If we were going to go see it, then, with you saying it's a funny film, it's not going to be like Up or Toy Story that makes me want to cry?
No. So it is sad. It makes you think at the end and things like that about relationships with mothers and things like that, but it's more funny. You'll come out of it remembering all the jokes and laughing at it rather than...
So that's obviously another turnaround for Pixar as well, then, isn't it?
Yeah.
Although they do like the bittersweet sort of elements with the long montage of music and storytelling through that media, don't they?
Yeah, there's some great music in it. Julie Fowler, she's a Scottish sort of folk singer, I suppose you'd call her, and she's recorded a couple of songs for the film. She was singing at the dinner. So they're quite good. So there's quite a lot of sort of spiritual kind of Scottish music that's throughout it.
And what voice actors are in the film then?
There's Robbie Coltrane. He plays one of the leaders of the clans that they're trying to match Megadeth up with. There's Kevin McKidd. He plays King Fergus. He's in a lot of American stuff now, but he was a Scottish actor in Scottish films here. But he's in, I've forgotten the name of it, one where they fight a bit like Gladiator in America. It's like a drama, like Troy or something, that kind of thing. I've forgotten what it's called, but he's quite really big in America now. He plays Merida's dad.
Right.
Emma Thompson is Queen Eleanor, so that's her mum. Kelly MacDonald, who's again quite known here in Scotland and maybe not elsewhere, she was in Trainspotting.
Right.
She was in Nanny McPhee, the second Nanny McPhee, as the person that was going to marry the dad. She plays Merida herself, in exactly the same accent she's got normally, so yeah. It fits really well.
So to be honest then, it looks like they've actually definitely gone for authenticity. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, the two main characters, I think King Fergus and Merida are the... and Queen Eleanor, but King Fergus and Merida are the two main characters, along with the Queen, and they have used authentically Scottish actors for those, and they were saying at the press conference that they let them improvise a lot and change words in the script, because obviously the script had been written in America.
Yeah.
So as far as they could, they used Scottish slang and Scottish words, but they let those two come in and improvise and make suggestions about what words to change and things like that. So they put in quite a few words of their own, which I don't think, if you aren't Scottish, you might not find so funny, but I found it really, really funny because I knew, you know, what they meant and that it was authentic. There's words like manky, that means really, really dirty.
And what's the animation like?
It's really, really good. A journalist at my table at dinner, who I think must have been taking drugs or something, compared it to Hello Kitty.
Right.
Which is just nonsense, and he said it was awful and it looked like a Hello Kitty animation, but it was excellent. The cloths and the fabrics in particular, like the tartan that they've used, and our hair, anything, the texture and the fabric was just so intricate and so like photographs that, you know, it was unbelievable. They had the woman there that did, his job it was to focus mainly on the fabrics and textures of things.
Yeah.
So she did like all the tartans, the velvets, Merida's hair and stuff, that Tia Cratter she's called. And she was talking about how the process took like 7 years from when they started working on Brave, to find hair that just suited them perfectly and to work on all the fabrics and things like that. And they've got their own tartan, and Merida's got her own tartan. Like, her family's got their own tartan, and the director and stuff is wearing that in a kilt at the dinner. So I think they're going to start selling stuff with the Merida family tartan on it and things.
No, I mean, this is the first original Pixar film since Up, because the last two Pixar films were both sequels, because obviously you had Toy Story 3 and Cars 2. Is it a good original story? I mean, if you had to sort of give it a review, is it back to Pixar magic? Is it a disaster?
No, it's an excellent film. And John Lasseter was made a point, actually, quite a few times, of saying that this is a completely Pixar film. You know, Disney had nothing to do with the creative aspects of it. It was completely Pixar. story's brilliant. It uses a little bit of traditional Disney princess and magic and that sort of stuff, but mixes it with all the, you know, the empathic and really deep stories and stuff that the Pixar used before and up, and the other Toy Stories and things like that. So it's a really, really good story. It's used a little bit of Disney influence, but it's mainly all Pixar, and I think, well, they should be really proud of it, and I think it's going to do really, really good.
Can you tell us how the archery comes into it? Because in Merida's Meet and Greet in Walt Disney World, there's a whole big play on archery. So how is that in the film, and why do you think they've chosen to use that element
for
Meet and Greet?
I don't want to give too much away, because the archery is part of the really big twist.
Okay.
At one point of it. So without giving that away, basically that's one of our tomboy hobbies, right. Our main tomboy hobby is archery. Our dad was a really good archer, and he taught her when she was young how to use a bow and arrow. So basically she's grown up and she's perfected that, and the Queen Eleanor doesn't like her doing it because she thinks it doesn't make her into a proper princess because she's doing boy things. So she's constantly going off with her bow and arrow and shooting things, because just basically to show that she's a tomboy. But it does play an important part a bit later on, which I don't want to give away. But basically it's just her hobby. It's a thing she does all the time, and it's a thing that they've used to set her apart from being a traditional sort of Disney princess. So, archery is her main hobby. And at the dinner they had archery lessons and stuff before it. So they had all the field around the hotel had people dressed in old-fashioned sort of Scottish stuff, and they were teaching all the journalists how to use a bow and arrow and stuff like that. So they've made a really big thing out of the archery, but it does play a really important part, but you need to watch it.
Did you actually watch the film in 3D then?
No, it was 2D.
Right.
It was 2D. I didn't see it in 3D. I'm not sure if it would really add anything to it. I suppose I need to see it in 3D before I could say that, but I think it was so powerful in 2D, I don't really think 3D would really add anything more to, you know, what you take away from the film. Then I went to a hotel in Edinburgh, one of the 5-star hotels that everyone was staying at. We had lunch, mm-hmm. and whilst we were waiting on the press conference, so there was only about seating for about maybe 50, 60 in the press conference, and they had a TV camera platform at the back, so there was a lot of like ABC networks and stuff like that filming the press conference, and then they had the big table at the front for the cast and the director and the producer, and a big Brave backdrop at the back. So it was a half hour press conference only. I'll go along the table. There was Tia Crater at the end. She was the sort of animator, the head of the sort of fabrics bit and the texture bit of the animation team. Then there was Kevin McKidd, who played King Fergus, and then Kelly MacDonald, who was Merida, the director, Catherine Sarafian, the producer, the producer, and John Lasseter. So I was in the front row, so I got a great view. The press conference, it was really, really interesting. They used the first 20 minutes really well to sort of get stuff out of the actors about how they prepared for the roles, and out of, you know, John Lasseter and Tia Crater about how the film developed and stuff like that. But yeah, it was an interesting press conference, and there was a lot of, you'll hear it obviously when you'll play it for everybody. There is a lot of interesting stuff in it, particularly about how the actors, you know, sort of improvised different words and added bits to the script and took bits out that they didn't think were authentically Scottish, and how the director changed as well. They kind of more or less sacked the original director, Brenda Chapman. She kind of came up with the idea for the film and was involved in the writing of it, and then they got rid of her, according to John Lasseter, through creative differences. Just his words. So in other words, they kind of fell out. They weren't going down the same path anymore. So they replaced her. But she is still on the opening titles and the credits as being a joint director. They've changed so much that I don't think much of it's what she originally put together. But they've given her the credit for it, which was nice. So
It's Pixar's first fairy tale. So that's obviously a big departure than their other films. What sort of time period would you say it's set in Scotland?
You're talking to someone that knows nothing about Scottish history. I'd say, now I might be way off and people are going to write in and shake me, but I'd say based on the dress of the people in the film and the people that they had doing like acting things at the dinner, I'd say it was kind of around the sort of Robert the Bruce type time, William Wallace type time, so kilts and swords and bows and arrows and, you know, attacks on castles and that sort of stuff.
This sort of time setting in historical, if you like, is another big departure from Pixar's classic sort of, you know, up to date
modern day. It's a big difference based on the time period, but the sort of time period they've created is more or less fictional. There's nothing kind of historically accurate about it whatsoever. They have just sort of used the kind of setting of that time period, but invented all their own events and their own characters and their own battles and their own everything. There's nothing sort of factual. You couldn't open up a history book, in other words, and find out anything in a film from it because it's all made up. But yeah, they've done a really good job of sort of, in terms of voice and manners of the characters and everything, of sort of recreating that period in that sense. But all the incidents and things that have happened, they're all fictional.
So is it a good representation of Scotland?
I think it is. They said that they came over, it would be quite a number of years now because they've been working on this for 7 years now. And they came over and did a big sort of recce and a big check of all the Highlands. They went on drives and stuff. They took a lot of photographs. They said they were particularly determined to get the landscape right. They wanted to make sure that the texture of everything was right. And Scotland's quite dark in the Highlands. It's difficult to explain unless you've been, but it's just vast, vast sort of greenery and moorlands and shrubs and everything. So they took a lot of photos of that, and they wanted to make sure that they got it looking authentic. And I think they did. I think they really did get it looking like Scotland.
Because they've also brought in a whole new tour package from Adventures by Disney.
They have, yes.
Well, so that, you know, they've obviously put into Edinburgh and Scotland and really putting everything, the big guns behind Disney, into promoting this film and also for tourism for Scotland as well.
Yeah, I mean, they were pushing the new Adventures by Disney itinerary to the journalists as well. I'm going to do something about that in the magazine as well because it does look, you know, really interesting. And on the Saturday, they took some foreign journalists. So it was just for foreign journalists, not like sort of Scottish ones or UK ones, on part of the itinerary. Mm-hmm. They went on a train up to, I don't know where they went actually, but up to the Highlands, somewhere far away. And they had some traditional Scottish food, and they went on a tour of some castles and stuff like that, obviously to try to get them to write about Scotland from a tourism point of view. And that was Visit Scotland that kind of took, our tourism agency that kind of took charge of that section of the junket weekend. So they took all the foreign press away in that train for the day. So they're really pushing it from a tourism point of view.
Yeah,
I think it will attract a lot of people to Scotland, and I think that's why they've had the junket up here, and they're having the European premiere up here later in the month.
So when's the European premiere then?
It's, I think, don't quote me, I think it's the 21st of June. No, the 30th. It's the end of the month, the 29th or the 30th of June.
Oh, ties in with the Edinburgh Film Festival, right? Then.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's the closing gala. So they've used it as the closing gala of the Edinburgh Film Festival. So yeah, they're really pushing Edinburgh and pushing. And I think because of the calibre of the hotels that they chose for the journalists and the PRs and everything, there were two of Edinburgh's, you know, biggest 5-star hotels, and they're really hoping that the journalists will go away, I think, and write also about the hotel, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
As well as the Brave Junket. So they took us to dinner, and it was a little bit outside the city. It was maybe about 5 minutes outside the main city of Edinburgh. It was another 5-star hotel called Prestonfield House. They tired the whole grounds of that. So it's acres and acres of land. They tired all that out, and the hotel. And when we drove up, through the fields of the hotel. There was archery going on, there was clan fighting, there was people making leather, there was sort of bonfires, campfires and all that sort of stuff. So they created a whole kind of brave land, if you know what I mean. There was falconry and things like that, so you could go around all the different bits. Mm-hmm. They basically had a reception, a champagne reception with canapes and stuff, which lasted about an hour outside because it was really hot and warm, and you could go around all the different bits. So the archery, they had big Scottish wolfhound dogs and stuff like that. You could pat, you could let the eagle and the whatever the birds were land in your hand and stuff like that, and do all these different activities that are in the film whilst drinking champagne and talking to people. So it was quite cool. And then they had a full Scottish pipe band, so there must have been about 35-40 bagpipers and drummers and stuff. They walked around the grounds and you had to follow them into dinner. And they had dinner set up all in there. It was big round tables,
right.
And a dance floor, which I believe I left at 10:30, and I think it went on till about 1, and there was dancing and stuff, I believe. Hearing from people afterwards on the dance floor, there was sort of Kayleigh dancing and stuff after I left the dinner. We had smoked salmon to start, with trout as well, and... Mm-hmm. Horseradish dressing and stuff, so a nice light starter. And then we had haggis as a sort of between the starter and the main course. Everyone was quite full by the end of this, so that was a sort of second starter. What they did was they brought the haggis out whole, about the size of a pig, I suppose you would say it was, a baby pig. Mm-hmm. And they did they read out Robert Burns, and they had a big knife and they carved the haggis up. So they did a big theatrical thing around the haggis, and then they took it away and they made it into these delicate little haggis type potato cake things. And then we had roast fillet of beef and asparagus and potatoes and stuff for dinner. And then for dessert, there was a clotted cream parfait with Scottish shortbread and strawberries, and then coffee and Scottish fudge. That was very nice. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds very delicious.
And John Lasseter gave a sort of informal, I think it was more just a sort of spur of the moment thing, a sort of informal welcome speech at the start, and thanked everyone. And they all went round and did the activities and everything with us all as well. So it was a good way to end the day.
When can we see it over here? Because I actually want to see it. Let me have a look. I can't find a date in all this press
packs. Yeah, I think it's released in... I think it's released the end of this month in America.
Yeah, 22nd it's going to be released in America.
Yeah. And then they've got the European premiere here at the end of, I think it's the 29th or the 30th, I can't remember which, of June.
There's 30th of June here.
Yeah, 30th of June here. So hopefully I should bring you some video footage at least, and some audio from the red carpet and that for you too as well. And then I think it's not out here properly until August.
Oh my heavens.
I'm sure it's the 13th of August or something.
It baffles me why they do this. They did this with Up, where they release it in America.
I know.
And then we don't
it
get
seems
it
strange. It does seem a bit strange even more so in this instance, because it is such a Scottish film. You would think they would have released it here first and then. But to be honest, yeah. As much as I love Disney and Pixar and love all the stuff they're doing for me in the magazine and love all the stuff they did for the junket and love the film, there is a definite bias towards America. Even at the junket, you could see it. And that's kind of carried over with them releasing it in America. So I think Disney, it is an American company. There is a general bias towards Americans.
Yeah.
More of them for a start. So I suppose their biggest hit for this film will be America, so
yeah.
I can understand in a way they're sort of thinking about it, but I want to see the film now. I'm all braved up now.
It was really good. You'll love it when it comes out. I'm sure they'll have some preview screenings and stuff before August. They must do, because it's a long time between the premiere and the release, so I'm sure they'll do something.
It's all right, I'm going to the States in August. I can watch it there then.
Ah, okay. And they've put a lot of merchandise and stuff out in the Disney stores here already. You've probably seen that. There's dolls and Vinylmations and everything.
Yeah.
So
the scandal of the Brave Vinylmations, where the Disney store got the currency conversion
and
tried charging us £40 when it
was
being sold in America for $40. I believe that has, no, I believe it's been amended now and it's down to what it should be, but
yeah, I mean, it all carries over to that as well, that all the kind of American bias. But I suppose Disney is an American company, so you've got to expect it.
So have you got any fun stories to share? I believe you interacted with Mr. Lasseter.
His little wife was cute. I don't know if I've got any fun stories. The director loved the big dogs that they had. They were huge dogs, but like Shetland ponies, I suppose. They had the German actress there who's voicing Merida in Germany. She's called Nuga. They had her there and she loved the dogs and she was rolling about on the floor with them, on the grass with them. So I've got photos of that, but I made quite good friends with a German journalist that was there and she was telling me that the woman's really, really famous in Germany and like their biggest kind of movie star and everyone loves her. So she was kind of hanging about, but I wouldn't have known who she was unless. John Lasseter, yeah, in the hotel lobby. I waited and grabbed him because I was sad. He had his Hawaiian shirt on, typically. You know how they always make jokes that he's got a Hawaiian shirt on all the time? And he made a joke at dinner that he's smarter now and not in one of his Hawaiian shirts because he was in a kilt. And they were, John Lasseter, well, all the producer and the director were fascinated by the sort of Scottish entertainment at the dinner. So they were running up out their seats up when the man was reading Robert Burns and stuff with their phones and filming it. You know, like it was a kind of circus type freak show thing. So they were all really fascinated by the sort of Scottish stuff that they had at the dinner. And when the Julie Fowlis is sings two songs in the film and she was singing them at dinner and he was holding hands with his wife and he had his eyes closed at one point listening to the music.
Oh, how cute. Well, thank you very much for joining us this morning, Laura. And now here's the press conference audio for our listeners.
Officers of Pixar, great director in his own right, but functioning here as executive producer of Brave. Please welcome John Lasseter. Producer with Pixar and producer on Brave, please welcome Catherine Serafian. The director of the film, please welcome Mark Andrews. One of the many animators who made this film look as exquisite as it does, please welcome shading art director Tia Kreta. And our actors, please welcome first of all in the role of Merida, Kelly MacDonald. And playing Lord MacGuffin, please welcome Kevin McKidd. Right, I'm going to start with a couple of questions and then we'll go to you guys. John, could you start us off by letting us know what marked Brave out for you as a project that was worthy of Pixar and what attracted you about making a film set in Scotland?
First, I've always loved Scotland. I traveled, you know, as one of those American students in the summertime that you probably all get tired of around Europe. And in the summer of 1979, I had just graduated from CalArts, and I toured all around Europe and found my way up to Scotland, and I spent about 2 weeks traveling up here and absolutely fell in love with Scotland. And it was the beauty, the traditions, the customs, but also the people. I found the people here just so warm, wonderful, funny, you know, and they've always kind of was, you know, just lived in my heart. I mean, I just knew that this place is one of my favorite places on earth. And so 7 years ago, when this idea was first pitched, I was very excited about this because, number one, it's very different than anything Pixar had done. And that's what we always strive to do at Pixar, is to do things that are really different. Number two, the kind of seems like the rest of Hollywood animation studios had turned their back on ever doing sincere fairy tales again. And to me, I'd never understood that because I loved them and I knew the audience still loved them. And so I thought, well, great, if they're not going to do it, this is perfect. This idea fits. Pixar will do its first fairy tale, but we'll do it Pixar style. And And so I think it's associating those two things, and also the character of Mary would be the first Pixar female main character, which was very important for me to find the right story to do that one, because it's something we really wanted to do. So it's kind of those three things were really kind of at the core of it. And I knew that this movie would stretch the studio technically, artistically, and story-wise in areas that we had never been in. So that was very exciting for me.
I'd like to talk to Catherine and to Tia about we know that Pixar engages in these very long processes of research, very intense research, and that certainly shows up on the screen. Can you talk a bit about the process of preparing the film and also the engagement with the landscape that the animators got into?
Yes, sure. We started this journey, right here in Edinburgh about 6 years ago on a research trip, because it's research, research, research at Pixar. You know, start by really the truest sense of where you want to begin the story, which is touching the rocks and the heather and the lichen and breathing the air and seeing the weather changes. So we started really there and got lots and lots of video footage and drawings and sketches and photographs and took those back to Emeryville, California, where we work, and shared them with our technical artists who are amazing and talented and so brilliant. And you know, we offered up this huge challenge, and John has always said that art challenges technology, and it's, you know, never truer than here on Brave. We had a real, real challenge to serve up. But then also, technology inspires art, and there was a wonderful back-and-forth collaboration with our technical teams as we developed the technology for the hair on our wonderful characters, including Merida, and the cloth, the garments, the Scottish forests, and the vegetation. And Tia and her team were really hands-on in developing that texture and the cloth, and working with our animation and technical scientists to realize the vision.
I just might add that the thing that we were inspired by, especially in the locations of Scotland, is the beautiful chaos that exists. Nothing is perfect. It's always this grand mix of beautiful vegetation. And so the computer doesn't love chaos, but we sure do. And even in Merida's hair, you see that. And it really became a thing that we grew attached to and loved as we were making the film.
I'd like to talk to Mark about something that John's touched on, which is the establishment of this first Pixar female protagonist. That's quite a responsibility to create such an iconic character. How did you go about that?
Well, I think at Pixar, I mean, all Pixar's movies have a very dynamic protagonist in them. And, you know, you start out with a toy first, and then we have a bug, and then, you know, we've had an old man and a Boy Scout and a fish and some superheroes and stuff. So that this one is a female is fantastic, but I think more importantly for the story, for the all audiences to get on board with this character, she had to be this dynamic, powerful force of nature that we can get behind and care for. And that was the most important part in creating this character.
Mm-hmm. And to the actors, Kelly and Kevin, I suspect that you might have had to guide the production team slightly on aspects of Scottishness and on certain elements of language. How much of yourselves and how much of your own backgrounds did you bring into the making of this film?
Well, for me, the description of Merida there is so far removed from me that if it was a live action, I think I wouldn't have fit in the casting room. So it was a real challenge. The teenage aspect of it wasn't a challenge, which is quite, I'm very ashamed of. That came really quickly back again after 17 years. And it was a real learning curve for me, because I've never worked like this before. And the way I normally work is, like, I normally underplay everything. And that's just, you can't get away with that on animation. So everything had to be amped up. And luckily, I was most often in a room with Mark Andrews, which really helped that.
Kevin, you were underplaying here, being quite delicate now.
I thought I was being very subtle. it was great fun to play these characters, and I rarely get asked to be Scottish anymore. You know, I'm usually doing American accents, called American accents. So it was lovely, and, you know, to work with Pixar, you know, I got asked to play young MacGuffin, and then Lord MacGuffin came later, I think. I think that's how it happened. But young MacGuffin was to have this very thick, incomprehensible Scottish accent. And what I loved about kind of collaborating was, instead of it just being a generalized, you know, thick Scottish accent that you couldn't understand, Catherine and everyone was so interested in my local dialect from my area of Scotland, you know, and so I got to bring that to the party, and I feel very proud of that, that, you know, that Pixar are willing, you know, because it's such a creative, collaborative team that, you know, you can throw ideas in and people run with them, and they did, and it's, I think it's testament to the kind of the quality of the work, you know, that it's very specific work as opposed to generalized, you know, and that's not always the case in movies. So, and it was a lot of fun to kind of, to get to speak in my crazy local dialect. You know?
And Kelly, you know, when you were, one of the things that we were really interested in is for you to put your own, you know, suggest your own slang and ad-lib stuff, and you did that quite a bit.
Yeah, that was fun, because, you know, I think you all did an amazing job writing a Scottish script in San Francisco, but there were certain things that didn't, you know, just didn't ring true, and I knew that truth was really important, and so we felt really comfortable sort of saying that's not really a Scottish word, there's other words that we could substitute, and yeah.
It was very funny, because we had at one point we started getting notes from different, you know, people around Disney and stuff of saying, we don't understand, you know, these words, you know, we probably should make it so, change that out so it's words that everybody can understand. And we were like, yeah, no. We love that because we don't understand, but we know if they're honest and they're true. And part of it for me was I wanted the families and all the people going to see the movie in Scotland to look up and go, wow. They captured Scotland, and that was really, really important. And I think to have these great actors to help us with that, and we really did tap into their, you know, being raised in Scotland, and just to bring as much of true Scotland to the film.
Okay, I'm going to take my first question from a young journalist who's here from Film Club, which is the educational charity that puts film clubs in the UK schools. Go ahead, Emma.
I really enjoyed the film. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. And I'm Scottish myself, and I really enjoyed it from a Scottish point of view. How important do you think it is to show off Scotland in film, and what aspects of the film would other children from perhaps other countries enjoy about the film?
That's a good question.
That's a great question. Thanks. I'll start in
okay.
Mark. When we create a movie that has a setting, and it could be anywhere, it is really important for us to make it authentic. Because even if you're not from Scotland, everyone around the world watching this film, there will be an authenticity that you can sense of it, whether or not you know that these words are true Scottish slang or not, or the look, you know, or the lighting within the scene really has that look of Scotland. But you'll feel it. I believe that you always feel it. It's the same authenticity that we have in Cars about Route 66 or the racing in Cars, the same authenticity of in Nemo, of the look of being underwater, you know, where it's not realistic, but it really is believable. And I think that's what's so important. And secondary, I just hope that people get inspired to come visit Scotland from seeing this film too, because we love this country so much.
Yeah, there's a great, as a storyteller, we want to transport an audience somewhere, give them this experience of being someplace. And the backdrop of Scotland, to me, is very personal, and, you know, I'm in love with it. And to show off that character, I think any kid, no matter where you are going to see this kind of magical place that the story is set in. And then if you're Scottish, you're going to see Scotland a way you've never really seen it before, you know, characterized in this, you know, uniquely authentic type of way.
Okay. Kelly, as a Sunday Post representative, I'd want to know the history behind Jing Scriven's Help Above.
You're rotten. I've just always known that saying, I don't know, blame my mum. See, I'm just like Merida, really. I'll blame my mum.
It's the Bruins, isn't it? It's from the Bruins. Did it start in the Bruins?
Yeah, it's from the Bruins, so obviously in the Sunday Post. But also, as you touched on being a rebellious teenager, were you given the support when you said you wanted to go into acting?
Yeah. I wasn't really rebellious. I didn't have very much to rebel against. I sort of ended up getting the part in Trainspotting. It's quite a risky part in places, but you know, my mum was completely supportive and now claims she always knew this was the life I was going to lead. So yeah, she was I had a very supportive family.
Excellent, thank you. Brian?
Just to elaborate on something with Kevin and Kelly. You were talking about ad-libbing and words that you introduced. Can you give us any concrete examples beyond Jinx Scrivens Helmet Ball of words that you introduced into the script, and indeed any words that were in the script originally that you said, no, that's not Scottish?
You would remember. I think Mark would remember better.
Manky.
We had
Manky.
We had Manky. We didn't have Manky. Gammy.
We
didn't
have Gammy.
Gammy was fine.
Gammy loved
Numpty.
Herdies.
Yeah, Herdies. That Craig Ferguson brought in. Herdies.
Billy. So many.
Herdies off.
Billy, too many words to mention.
Billy, yeah. Okay. Some of them not appropriate.
Some of them not appropriate.
Because we'd always have to check.
Yeah, right.
Is that?
Yeah.
Is that sense? What does that mean? Right. Is that a body part?
Right.
It's not going to work if it's a body part.
Right.
Oh, it's a potato. Fine. And we were good to go.
Show is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and other devices with Stitcher. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your App Store or at Stitcher.com.
Aloha!
Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. So in this week, Ask Mini Minxes, we have had another question from one of our much valued listeners, Michelle.
We have indeed, Kimmy.
And I believe it's quite an exciting and unusual question. So, as always, I'll sit back and relax on this segment and hand the mic over to you.
And this week's question comes from a lovely family from Lancashire. And they ask the following. It's our first trip to the Magic Kingdom. We want to spend a day separate. My wife will be taking our two princess daughters, age 5 and 7, around the Magic Kingdom. And I'll be left with my son, who is 11. Not quite sure on what the best rides are going to be for him, as he's not really into the princess scene. What would you recommend for us to visit? So, I sat down and I started to think about this question and I thought, oh, hang on a minute. I've got a little bit of inside information here because I basically have a 12-year-old son, which is fairly similar. So I asked him to help me and put together a little mini touring plan for boys for Magic Kingdom.
Yes, I do.
So can I introduce my lovely son, Kieran? Say hello, Kieran.
Hi.
Would you like to talk us through your little touring plan?
Okay, it's called Kieran's Picks for Magic Kingdom. For Adventureland, it's got to be Pirates of the Caribbean. It's a very good ride and it has a very good story to it. And in Frontierland, I've chosen two, Splash Mountain and Big Thunder Mountain Railroad. In Liberty Square, I have chosen Haunted Mansion, and that's kind of it. And in Tomorrowland, I have chosen Space Mountain, Astro Orbiter, Stitch's Great Escape, Buzz Lightyear, Space Ranger Spin, and Tomorrowland Speedway.
Okay, so is that your top picks for a boys' tour in Plymouth Magic Kingdom?
Pretty much, yeah.
Do you think they'd enjoy that?
Yeah, they would enjoy it.
I think Kimmy would personally enjoy herself doing Stitch's Great Escape. That's one of her favourite characters. Did you know that?
It's also my sister's favourite too.
Well, thank you for your help, Karen. So, I hope that's a very brief but a very quick, simple answer. If your princesses are off doing their bibbidi-bobbidi-boo and going round all the princess haunts getting autographs, that touring plan would probably take a good 4 hours to go around, so perhaps stop and have a Dole Whip at Adventureland.
Churro!
Churro. Karen's obsessed with churros. Maybe a Mickey waffle while you're through in Liberty Square.
Yeah, they're good.
And hopefully that'll be some use to you. Thank you for the question. Keep them coming in.
I must safely say, though, from Kieran's sound advice there, Tomorrowland is definitely the place for young boys.
Definitely.
Yeah,
You missed something out, though, that probably the older generation probably liked. Just
Carousel of Progress.
Carousel of Progress.
It is good, but it has, you know, but it has a good story, like how it changed over the years, and that is pretty good.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the TTA. We have a little travel round.
Oh, that is good too. So, if you want to go on that, okay there.
Thank you, Karen, for your help.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this week, Karen, and thanks for Michelle as well for using your head and your noggin and using the resources that were around you.
Much easier than last week's question, Kim.
And if anyone else has a question, obviously send it to us in the normal ways. You can tweet us, you can Facebook it to us, or you can email us at contact@theminiminxes.co.uk. Well, what a brave episode that has been.
Go brave, girls.
Want to just quickly say thank you to the people appearing on our show. Obviously, thank you to Sue Farrell for coming on and telling us all about the Disney Moms panel. Thank you to Laura for wanting to come on and share her experiences at the Brave Press Junket. And a special thank you to Michelle and Kieran for helping out in the question.
Oh, bless you, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, we enjoyed having him on. So just a few bits of housekeeping that I just want to sort of say. Obviously, just making everybody aware that the feed has changed. We've moved from Podomatic to Podbean. Now that's caused a few people a few hiccups, and I apologise. But yeah, the feed has changed, so if you haven't subscribed to the new feed, please do. Speaking of subscribing, if you haven't subscribed to us on iTunes yet, please do. And if I could ask a huge Minimix favour, if you please could leave us a small review. Moving feeds has made us lose a few of our amazing reviews that we got from previous listeners. So please, if you did leave a review on the old feed, or if you fancy leaving a review on the new feed, please head over to iTunes and just leave us a review. We'd really appreciate it.
So if you'd like to contact the Minimixes, you can reach us at Twitter, and it's at the Minimixes. Facebook us up at the Minimixes. If you wish to email us, contact@theminiminxes.co.uk.
And just to let everybody know that our next episode is on the 25th of June 2012. Not 100% sure what that episode's going to be yet, but I'm pretty sure that we'll have something up our sleeves. And I have an announcement to make.
Do we need another drum roll?
Possibly. Depends if you think this announcement's important or not.
Oh, alright. Maybe it's not important then.
Do me a drum roll, please, Michelle. Your drum roll's pathetic.
I'm sorry, I don't have a drum in front of me.
I'll buy you a drum for Christmas.
Oh, well, no.
It's Karen. I would like to announce that I've officially made Michelle the new co-host of the Mini Mixes.
Yay!
I couldn't get rid of her, to be honest. She's chained to the front door, so... I had to kind of make her host. No, I'm only joking. No, she's been an incredible help and aid over these last 3 weeks while I've been struggling to do stuff by myself. Well, I ain't really been doing it by myself because Michelle's been supporting and backing me up. And we've had a lot of positive response and comments and feedback about her joining the show. So I thought, right, well, when I know when I'm onto a good thing. So I've made her a permanent co-host. So yay for Michelle. Also quickly want to announce that somebody has asked me to be an interviewee on their podcast.
Ooh.
Team Disney Podcast. Now, I'm not 100% sure when this episode's going to be released, but I am doing the interview next week, so I would expect it to be released in the next few weeks, where I will be discussing my love for Disney, my entry into the Disney Brit Idol competition, and the aftermath of the competition and what I've been up to recently. So if you haven't heard of them before, check it out. They're a really good podcast. And you'll get to hear my dulcet tones again.
Oh, it's a bonus.
Always.
You'll have to speak slowly, though, because Americans don't really get our Yorkshire accent, do they?
Well, especially mine, because you pronounce it better than I do.
Sorry, can't help that. Well, it's probably because you're sort of... in a different part of Yorkshire.
True. So that's it, really. Is there anything else you want to add, Michelle?
Can we give you a little bit of a hint on what's coming up in the next show, perhaps, there, please, Miss Kim?
Hey, now you're co-host, you can do anything you want.
Super duper. Right. Well, our next show is going to have a really big character from the Orlando scene. Wonder if you can guess who it is. Maybe you could send us a tweet with some ideas on who you think our next guest will be on our show 11. Might give you out some clues over Twitter over the next couple of weeks.
So stay tuned to our Twitter feed for Michelle's mixy clues on who our next guest on the next show will be. So just to remind everybody, that show is going to be released on the 25th of June. So just once again, thank you for the guests that have joined us. Thank you for everybody that's listening. And thank you to Michelle.
My pleasure.
And we will see you all on the 25th. Many kisses.
Mwah.
Oi, that's my line.
I'm co-hosting now. I can give a kiss if I like.
Mwah.
Mwah.